Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.
Hello and you're very welcome to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby here on Joe, together with Guinness. I'm Barry Murphy. I'm Andrew Trimble. Good man. Delighted to be back. We've been away for a few weeks, but what a week to come back. We've got a lot to talk about on today's show. Johnny Sexton has been named the Player of the Year for 2018. We had Josh van der Fleer on the phone earlier on, and we broke some news to Josh. And that news is, of course, that Joe Schmidt will be hanging up his coaching boots after the World Cup next year.
He'll be hanging up his whistle.
His whistle, yeah. huge news.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'd say after last night, Joe, I don't think Joe attended the awards in Monaco. Last night it was all about Johnny. The Player of the Year. Johnny must have been thinking, you know, this week everybody's going to be talking about me. And Joe went, see those headlines? Those are mine, mate.
Yeah.
This is all about me this week.
Yeah, wow. What a. And we've confirmed that Andy Farrell will take over.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think the biggest news for me is that he's not going to coach.
Yeah.
I don't think that was on anyone's radar.
Yeah.
I think everyone thought it's got to be the All Blacks or. And I think that was a bit naive thinking that job would just become available to him straight away, but I think is it a massive compliment to us that he's done now.
I think it is, and him finishing coaching is almost probably a little bit of an explainer as to why he was a little bit more emotional in the last couple of press conferences. He was talking quite nostalgically about his time in Ireland, and obviously then he wasn't just talking about his time in Ireland or. Like one stage of his career, he was talking about his whole career in coaching. So you can see why he was a little bit more emotional than you thought he might have been. It's interesting, though, that people were saying, is he going to stay or is he going to go? It looked like certainly like he was going to go. But in typical Joe Schmidt style, he throws in something different.
And
he does that with selection.
Yeah.
Lads are going, who's going to play there? And then he just throws in someone different. And then this is just classic Schmidt. He's gone altogether.
Yeah, will this kick them on? I think I wonder. Like, will this make it a little bit more of an incentive to drive the team on to win a World Cup for Joe? And considering what he's done for Irish rugby as a whole, I think over the last 7 or 8 years since he coached with Leinster, I mean, I just find the whole Irish rugby community at the moment, from top to bottom. Even from the fans, it's so inclusive and it's so funneled towards the Irish team and winning in the right fashion. Kind of like what the All Blacks have had for a long time. I think we're starting to emulate that, and I think a lot of that is down to Joe, the standards he's brought.
Him finishing coaching altogether means it's not just an Irish story, it's a rugby story everywhere, because coaches everywhere are now starting to emulate Joe, and that happened in Ireland. Obviously, the last few years, you got like provincial coaches who have their stamp and their style as well, but bringing in something. Joe does it like this. Let's look at defending a certain way or attacking a certain way off scrum line, all this kind of stuff, all detailed. And then now that's gone everywhere, because the second best team in the world beating the All Blacks, then everybody starts to emulate. What's the magic formula? And then now that he's finished, then I wonder how long that'll last, or I wonder in 2 or 3 years' time, are we still looking at the best teams in the world coaching with that style, or could there be something new then? Or it's going to be interesting to see what way that's picked up after the World Cup, after Joe's gone.
Yeah, he's gone.
Yeah.
Just writing songs about him and stuff like that now, just these whimsical ballads about poor old Joe. Have you worked close with Andy Farrell?
He's had a big old impact, hasn't he?
Yeah, it'd be a similar vein of kind of attitude or personality to Joe.
The balance of the two of them works really well together, actually. So that'll be again hard to kind of follow up on that. But Farrell is a little bit, probably a little bit more laid back. Joe is a little bit more like kind of. Wouldn't really switch off from rugby. He'd be kind of thinking about rugby. That's why he's kind of so thorough. Farrell kind of balances that a little bit. So does Simon Easterby as well. Actually, the three of them work well together. But Farrell, I'm not sure if he's had any other coaching role apart from defence. So I don't know. You'd imagine there'd be someone else brought in to...
Yeah, well, obviously he was a he was a 10 in his day, and it was rugby league, and then he threw his hand at rugby union for a while. But he would have been quite a creative player back then, so he definitely has it in his armour.
Oh, sure, he does.
Rugby brain. So, but yeah, at that level to have coached a team and cover all aspects of a game, I suppose, is quite important. But working under Joe for the next 12 months at least, I suppose it's a, and he's probably known for a while as well.
Yeah, you would have thought so.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting to see what Joe, I mean, if he actually just stops working, I can't imagine that he wouldn't be driven by something. I'd be really interested to see what he gets into, even if he takes a year or two off eventually. His style of kind of leadership and management is obviously works unbelievably well in a rugby context, but I think it could work well in any context, any kind of business context. And you'd imagine he would be getting offers left, right and centre for that style, kind of thorough, detailed, pragmatic style to executing and delivering, be that sport, be that business, anything. He could do what he wants, that fella.
He does a lot of kind of keynote speaking, doesn't he, at different businesses and companies around the country. And I haven't been to one, but I've heard he's brilliant. There's a lot of humour involved and a very inspiring. And I suppose it's leadership, yeah. It does cross over massively from sport to business. Yeah, we're kind of Hermitage Green or in the always looking for a maybe another option for a management. Or
I thought you were going to say like a bassist. Was it your bassist thing going through?
Yeah.
Oh, you're the bass player.
I'm the bass player, man. Yeah, do you imagine Joe Schmidt be turning his hand to music? That'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I'd happily take him on board. But yeah, what a way to go out, to win, I suppose, to be named Coach of the Year, Team of the Year, beat the All Blacks twice, and hopefully a World Cup.
Yeah.
What more do you need?
I know. Yeah. Some way to go.
Yeah.
I wonder, does it almost put a little bit more pressure on? And he's thinking, this is my only chance to do this. I'm not going to coach the All Blacks. I'm not going to continue coaching Ireland.
Yeah.
I've got one shot at this. Does it put more pressure on, or does it kind of make it more special, or does it make it more...
Immediately, my gut is that it makes it more special, doesn't it? I think there's movie in this, like, you immediately think, like, this it could be a Joe Schmidt film or something, where it's kind of like Coach Carter or something like that, or Remember the Titans. It's just such a perfect story.
You might get a soundtrack gig.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking straight away.
Although you're not playing anymore, Joe's playing bass.
Probably be better than me straight away. But I can't believe it. Yeah, what timing. Huge stuff. So, look, we've got Josh van der Fleer that's going to be jumping on the phone, or did earlier on. So we're going to be talking to him in a few minutes. And we got the opportunity to break that news to him, which was pretty interesting. So you'll hear his thoughts. But I just want to bring up something that happened last week while I was away. Alex was here and you spoke about Billy Vulipolo and how he ran over you in 2014 in Twickenham, I believe.
The tweet I received after the game described it as me getting deleted at Twickenham.
It's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
So we have a quick audio here from the House of Rugby in the UK and Billy's take on that moment.
The collision that I experienced, 9 times out of 10, you would have no memory of that.
Right.
He made a line break off a line out, and he was building up a head of steam coming my direction.
Yeah.
He had no intention of using any footwork.
Right. The Maori sidestep, as it's known.
And I got tweeted after the game and someone said, Andrew Trimble just got erased at Twickenham.
Control-Alt-Delete on your career. Yeah.
So that was me gone. He literally didn't even slow down.
Is he all right or what? He's really good value.
No, he's not.
Yeah, he is.
And if I ever see you on that sofa again... firstly, right, a few questions, right? What is he talking about? Right. Secondly, what are you doing over there? Thirdly, why is he got a sofa and we're on a wooden table?
Until you're prepared to commit and say...
Ron Weasley, wasn't it?
No, that was Carl, who's a very nice chap, and he's going to play Rugby United in New York. We were actually talking about whether you might go out to play in New York.
Oh, you were talking about me behind my back, weren't we?
Well, to the nation.
Right, nah.
Yeah.
What, the five listeners?
Do you remember that incident with Andrew Trimble, or was he just another victim of
I saw
of
it a different
kill?
Way. Someone slapped the ball down, and I came out. Devin Tone actually slapped it down, I remember this. And I picked it up, and I remember Lenny shouting, just run, and I was like, I think I'm doing something wrong here. probably the fact that I've grown up with Tongan parents, you always feel like you're doing something wrong. So I look back, I look forward, I look back, and I didn't actually remember looking at Trimble.
And then did you notice that you'd run over him? No,
not until I'd actually done it.
Right.
Because I think he was as confused as me.
Right.
Well, he was when you ran over the back of his head. He's the only player I've ever seen with footprints up his back.
Because if I actually did know that I was in the clear, I probably would have run a bit faster. Not that I'm fast, but
Come on, mate. Are you serious?
I reckon
honestly, I've seen Milk Toe quicker than you. What are you talking about?
You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
So earlier we had Josh van der Fleer on the phone before he went off to train for the day, and during the conversation the news broke about Joe Schmidt's future. So we have Josh's response just in the middle of this, which is pretty special. So let's have a listen. Okay, we're delighted to announce that we now have Leinster and Irish international and double All Black winner Josh van der Fleer on the phone. Welcome, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
Hey, Josh. How you getting on? Trimby here.
All good. How are you, Trimby? How are things?
Yeah, good, good. Josh, have you come down from the amazing feeling of beating the All Blacks for the second time there a couple of weeks ago?
We were focusing pretty quick on the USA game, so had to get over it quick, but it's nice. It's nice to kind of wake up yesterday and this morning having the November series finished and obviously happy with four wins and three that I was involved in. So, yeah, pretty happy, to be honest.
Yeah, Josh, I think you were speaking to the press after the All Blacks game. You and Lukey both came out with the same thing, and it was big game next week against USA. having arguably just become the best team in the world, is it still that mindset, or surely there was an opportunity just to relax and take it easy that night?
Yeah, I suppose I didn't really know what to say, so it was a good get out, I suppose. But I suppose we did enjoy ourselves kind of that evening and had a chance to relax and obviously enjoy. Was probably didn't appreciate it as much on the day because we were just so focused on trying to do your job and trying to put a performance in, but then also you're kind of thinking it can't go too mad here because we're hopefully playing in a test match next week. So
what did you do, Josh? Do you go out with the All Blacks? Do you go out and have a night out with them, or do you keep it to yourselves and your family?
We just kind of kept it to ourselves. We kind of had a good chat with a few of the All Black lads after the game, to the post-match dinner, and kind of a few speeches and stuff, and got to chat to a few of the New Zealand boys, and then they were flying off early the next morning, I think, and then we just kind of kept it among ourselves, kept it quiet enough, and just kind of relaxed in the hotel.
Josh, a couple of years ago, obviously we were both involved in that win in Chicago. I maybe naively thought that I was the magic formula to beating the All Blacks, but turns out it's you. Has that been put to you that you're the magic formula?
Not at all, no. I think there's a few more common denominators between the two, I think.
I can't think of anything that's more unlikely than you coming out with someone as humble as you saying, I am the magic formula to beating the All Blacks.
No, definitely not me now. To be honest, I wasn't even meant to be. Well, I was on the bench, so I was usually on the bench for the second game, and then Sir Dan would have done a better job than me. He was ready to start, and then unfortunately it was a bit tight and had to pull out of the game, so I ended up playing the game. So it was I suppose Joe might not see it as the secret formula if I was on the bench, but it was nice to be involved in two games like that. I suppose just very lucky and blessed to get involved in those two games, and kind of didn't do too much in either of them, but good to be involved in a win.
Yeah, Josh, did you find it? In a way, whenever you get called up late, or might have been, was it Thursday or Friday you found out, so you don't have the full week of nervousness building into what's a massive game. Do you think that's kind of, you miss out on some of the build-up, or you actually, you're better off because you don't have to deal with the nerves and the big build-up and all the expectancy?
I think it was, it actually worked out quite well because, yeah, I wasn't, obviously, starting, you're probably a bit more nervous than you would be if you're on the bench. So it was kind of Friday. It was just at the captain's run that I found out I'd be starting. So I only had a day of stress, I suppose, or kind of the nerves kick in pretty quick the moment you're starting. But it wasn't too bad because I got to run a few of the plays and get a bit of team run stuff done earlier on in the week. I was kind of swapping in and out with Dan, and then got to do most of the training then on Thursday, and then did the full captain's run down. So I actually felt really prepared. I wasn't really worried about coming in having not done enough training or whatever. So it actually worked out quite well.
And do you know, the fact that you were only supposed to be back from injury on November 20th, did it make it a little bit special, more special, I suppose, that you got back a bit early and got to be involved in such a huge November series? How much did that mean to you, having gone through, you know, all the trouble of getting, you know, such a serious injury out of your way and getting back on the pitch and taking part in those two
games?
Yeah,
it was really special. I was kind of spent the whole injured start of February against France, and kind of spent the next 7 months or whatever it was before I got back playing, just kind of thinking about what it's like to be back playing and what games I want to play in, and trying to get back for Leinster first of all, and try to get back in the team there, and then obviously hoping to get into the team after that. And yeah, it is really satisfying just when kind of set a goal like that, and then managed to get involved in a few Irish games, which is pretty incredible.
Yeah, and did the knee hold up all right? Any troubles or any soreness now? After
no troubles at all. A few knocks here and there, but nothing bad at all. So it's actually been brilliant. It's credit to the physios and all in Leinster. I just kind of did what I was told, and they managed to get me back a bit earlier than planned. So yeah, knee's been absolutely perfect, feeling really good, which is pretty encouraging.
Brilliant. I'm always interested to hear how what players inspired other players when they're growing up. Like, would you have had any particular number sevens that you would have, been inspired by, or that you looked up to as a young player, as a teenager, growing up, or any kind of style of seven that you would have, Richie McCaw or Neil Back?
Richie McCaw, in terms of around the breakdown, I always admired Richie McCaw and George Smith as well. Kind of always looked up to the two of them, wanted to be able to play like them. And then I kind of, I remember thinking that I'd love to be like that at the breakdown, but then maybe like Dritto in attack or
something. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I was thinking so a bit more of a ball
kind
player.
Kind of pick pieces from a few players, and I was like, I'd love a combination of a few of them. Obviously, it hasn't quite happened, but yeah, I suppose McCall would have been the main person I would look to on a try to record his games at home and try to get a few on tape that I could kind of watch back and see kind of player camera a bit whenever he was playing and kind of seeing what he did. I would have been big into doing that. And I think obviously nothing as close to being as good as him, but maybe someday. But yeah, he was probably the main player I looked up to.
Josh, I remember your first encounter with Carton House whenever you initially got into the squad. And you were a youngster at the time, so I think you were kind of just in awe of the whole setup, and I just remember you going over to the breakfast bar and just, like, I think you turned to Johnny and said, can we eat whatever we want? And then there was another moment where I think you're in the swimming pool, and there's that little machine. You stick your togs in and it dries your togs, and this blew your mind. So, is that kind of approach and that level of kind of treatment and luxury and professionalism, is that something you're kind of getting used to now?
Yeah, a bit more. I couldn't believe it, to be honest with you. I remember walking in.
You get one of them in your house.
Certainly catches eat as much as we want, whenever we want. I couldn't get over that now. living in a student house, like five other lads, and then coming into this, into that was pretty mind blowing. I'd never been in a setup like that, so yeah, it's sort of getting used to it now, but it's still incredible. You kind of half forget and come down to breakfast in the morning, and you're like, oh yeah, I can eat whatever I want, as much as I want now. It's pretty cool.
I was quite afraid of those short dryers for a while. I thought you could lose a hand in one of those early days. I was like, Killiney Castle, I think, was where I first encountered one of them at an Irish camp, and I was like, fuck, this thing could take my hand off.
Yeah. But I think a lot of people are speculating that that it's not actually Joe that's had a big effect on the team. It's been the tog dryers.
The tog dryers.
That's why they're out of their performance.
Could be onto something.
Yeah. Josh, tell me this: Do you still eat a lot of dark chocolate?
I do. Yeah, I do actually eat a lot of dark chocolates.
Do you remember the conversation we had? Obviously, Josh. Everybody kind of knows the way you are and how thorough you are, and how kind of you leave no stone unturned, and you're exactly the kind of Schmidt model of a player. And as part of that, you don't drink any coffee because you're trying to avoid caffeine. And I was able to point out, you were telling me how much you'd eat a lot of dark chocolate and stuff. That would be a real you'd be letting loose and snacking away on dark chocolate. and I told you there was caffeine in dark chocolate, and I thought you were about to burst into tears, Josh.
It was just that I remember exactly where you were standing, where I was standing, in Carton House beside the snack place. I was pretty disappointed to hear that now, but I'd be careful. I wouldn't have too much now. I used to always have it just before bed, and then you told me that, and I was like, he's got to be winding me up. So I googled it, and it's true. So no, still snacking away on them.
Oh, good man, good man. Well, that's obviously... So my advice then is that's kind of shaped your career then a bit, has it?
I suppose it has, yeah, you can say that.
Still influencing from the sidelines, yeah. Jimmy, I love
so
it.
So I played my part in beating the All Blacks again then.
Yeah. Well, Josh, we've got some breaking news that I'd like to just smack you in the face with here, and that's that Joe Schmidt has confirmed he will depart after the World Cup and Andy Farrell will take over.
Wow.
Absolutely, yeah, huge news. Your thoughts on that?
Well, it's pretty put me on the spot.
Just got handed this down.
Obviously, Joe's been absolutely incredible for Ireland, and he's obviously, everyone knows, he's been a massive part of why the team is where it is, and I suppose it's disappointing, but it's obviously you'd want him to stay on, and with the success you want that to continue. But he set us up brilliantly, I suppose. And see, I don't know what else to say. Andy Farrell's a great coach, so
yeah. I mean, Joe has actually said that he's finishing coaching completely. He's not going anywhere else. That's him after the World Cup. He's done. So I suppose that's a good tribute to Ireland as well, that he's not leaving us for other pastures, that he's happy enough to hang his boots up after that. But yeah, huge. I mean, he must have been a huge influence on your career to date as well.
He was, yeah. I mean, when I first came into Leinster, he was head coach. I was in the academy. First training session with Leinster was with him, and then he gave me my first cap, Irish cap, then as well. So yeah, he's been a massive part of my career so far. Yeah, and it'd be disappointing now to not have him coach. And he's obviously an incredibly gifted coach, but he deserves now hopefully a good send off in the World Cup next year.
Yeah, well, that can add a little bit more emotion to that side of things, you reckon? You could add another, you know, that you want to go out and win it for him, and you know, what you've achieved together over the last number of years.
I think everyone's going to be themselves driven, incredibly driven to win the World Cup. I mean, it's the biggest thing you can win in rugby. So I don't know if we need any more motivation, but if we do, then yeah, to give Joe a good send off would be pretty incredible. But obviously, I'm sure Joe will be just focusing on the Six Nations now and trying to win that as well. So I suppose that's where he'd be at anyway. And I suppose that's all we can focus on is now trying to get back in the team so I can keep playing under Joe. So that's the plan, I suppose.
Yeah, I think the whole nation's probably about to go into mourning.
Yeah.
We should go and change our outfits and change into sackcloth and ashes.
I suppose we have them for another year now anyway, so it's we'll make the most of it.
It's really put a downer on this episode, hasn't it?
It has a bit.
Sorry, Josh.
There's all funny games till then, you threw that in.
Yeah. This is probably as much a downer as when you find out there was caffeine in dark chocolate, Josh.
Probably up there, all right, yeah.
Well, look, yeah, that's we've taken up loads of your time, Josh. We really appreciate you coming on, and it's been interesting to share that moment with you, knowing that Joe is going hanging up his coaching boots. But look, we'd love to have you on the show as well, on the couch someday, if you come in for a chat. The very best of luck over the next few weeks and for the remainder of the season.
Thank you very much.
And yeah, well done again, man, on the last few weeks, and congrats on getting back after such a long time out. So
appreciate that. Thanks very much. Good chat, Josh.
Thanks, man.
Cheers.
Take it easy.
All right. See you. Bye.
Wow, that was a bit of a bombshell to drop on Josh.
Yeah.
Handled it very well.
He handled it very. He's a pro, isn't he?
Did.
A media pro. Not that we're media.
No. God, no. I'm a musician. That's what you are.
Yeah, me neither. I'm still finding my feet.
Well, I was kind of thinking maybe the players know already, but they probably wouldn't tell them just in case one of them would leak it or something like that.
Yeah,
so.
I'd be surprised.
So that was genuine response. That was pretty cool.
I think there's probably a lot of players who feel like Joe has had a massive impact on, certainly, obviously, Ireland, right? That whenever they're competing, they walk onto the pitch and they feel more confident, or they're more likely to get wins if won Grand Slams, Australia, New Zealand, all this here kind of stuff. But even on a more personal kind of feeling, I suppose, there's a lot of guys, I would imagine, feel like Joe has just enhanced their careers and personally made them better at what they do.
Do you think there's any of them that are relieved because he's such a maniac that could be so terrified of turning up to training?
I wonder.
They're like, oh, thank God.
Yeah, I wonder if there's a couple of guys who would be considered second string.
Yeah.
That would be going, this is my, I'm going to wait, I'm going to bide my time.
Yeah.
12 months' time, I'm going to shine.
Swatting back in.
Yeah.
Well, there would be one person that would be, that will, I suppose, keep on what Joe has done, and that is Johnny Sexton, who's kind of like his illegitimate son or
his
something
child.
Like that, isn't he? His child, yeah. Named as the best player in the world last night in Monaco, which is obviously an incredible achievement within the year and how much he's achieved and what he's done to get that accolade. But it goes back a hell of a lot longer to just this year. With Johnny, right?
Yeah, Johnny's been driving standards and kind of enhancing performances and just been getting better and better and pushing the guys around him to get better and better for years now. And he's always been, he's the equivalent of like a Schmidt kind of mindset on the pitch. So that's why he's so hard to replace. He doesn't accept anybody being in the wrong position, not executing correctly, not being vocal. He just demands high standards and of the guys around him and himself as well. So, he's been unbelievable this year. He's ticked every box, hasn't he?
Mm. And where he's come from, like, I mean, I remember playing against him for the first time down at Thomond Park in Munster versus Leinster game. And I think Felipe Cantapomi was out and Johnny had been playing with St Mary's the week before and he was drafted into play and we were like, let's target this fellow now and get at him. And immediately you got a sense that he was able for it, he was up for it, he had the head, despite being, he must have been only 19, 20 at the time. But he's just such a likable guy from when he's where he's come from, right?
Yeah.
You know, having...
Not on the pitch. I wouldn't say he's likable on the pitch.
On the pitch, no.
Yeah, I think he's dislikable on the pitch.
Really, yeah. I remember that moment when he celebrated in Roger's face in Croke Park, where people were like, what disrespect. But
That was an interesting wee dynamic relationship, the two of them, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And then it was just perfect that they ended up being at the same club together, coach and player.
Yeah.
And then went full circle and became reasonably good mates.
Yeah.
By the sounds of it.
Yeah. I wonder will it go full circle again and they'll
hit each other again.
Against each other. Yeah, that'd be a great.
Hopefully. From a neutral point of view.
Yeah. What an incredible achievement for any Irish player to be even considered for player of the year and then to win it. And totally unsurprising. I mean,
yeah.
The guys you were up against, Bowden Barrett, it's not like he was up against a nobody. But I think Johnny by far deserved to win that.
I'd love it if Malcolm Marks had got it.
Yeah. Out of nowhere.
Malcolm Marks.
What?
I don't believe you. Surely not.
Flipping tables and stuff.
I'd love to see Johnny's Joey Trimbiani humble loser
bullshit,
face.
Yeah. Bullshit. I think he and Rory Best both made interesting comments where they thanked both their wives and their family and their kids for the support that they've offered them, which is obviously a lovely thing to hear. And it is an interesting thing that your family do, once you've got that grounding and you've got that support from your family, I think you'll appreciate that as well.
I think Rory summed it up really well. He said, thanks a lot to the wives and partners, and I suppose what you do is you allow us to be selfish.
Yeah.
And I think that's perfect, because I mean, I remember Johnny actually after he had his second child, that evening he was at Carton House doing a walkthrough, and you know, like, no one else obviously. Yeah. Like, I think
the sacrifice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the sacrifice from the individuals, obviously as players we have to sacrifice a lot, but everybody around us has to sacrifice for us. I'm saying us because I used to play a bit. But I think they summed it up perfectly, and it's a nice little tribute.
It is, and that those nights are about, I think, celebrating the families and the friends and everyone that has gotten behind you. And like for Johnny from grassroots, like from, I'm sure, from his club days to school days, there's a lot of people there that he would thank. And it's great. It's great for Irish rugby. From Arts too, massive congrats to Johnny Sexton.
Congrats, Johnny.
Congrats, Johnny.
Do you think he subscribes?
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, well, everybody does.
Yeah, they do. God, she used to be better.
If Dricko and Tana subscribe, then I think Johnny subscribes.
Yeah, well done on that, by the way. I haven't spoken to you about that interview. That was
sorry to bring that up.
Thoroughly.
Do you know Tana? You know Tana? I was talking with Tana Umanga.
Tana.
He's a good buddy.
I've been saying it wrong all these years. You buddies now, yeah?
We are, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I'm getting touched.
He didn't really get a word in. It was just the two E talk.
Just me and Dricker.
Shite, actually. Yeah. I was like, more from Tama Umaga, please.
Were you jealous?
I was a little bit jealous. Yeah, I could have done. It could have been 4-13s on the couch. But
that would have been cool.
Yeah, it would have been cool. But anyway, yeah, that was... So I've been away. I've just been away, man. It's been lovely watching from afar. I was in Australia touring around for 3 weeks and trying to catch up with rugby and listening, and it gave me a nice bit of time to reflect on Irish rugby while I was away.
Mm-hmm.
And I came up with an analogy of the whole thing that's kind of based around Star Wars. So bear with me here, but the first victory that you were involved in Chicago is you remember?
Yeah.
That was like A New Hope, the first Star Wars, basically, where the All Blacks, being the dark side, the evil empire overruling the galaxy, but we fought back like the rebels.
Yeah.
And with a little bit of help from the Force, we won. Joe Schmidt being Obi-Wan Kenobi. Johnny Sexton being Luke Skywalker. You haven't worked out. I was kind of saying Devin Toner be more like Chewbacca, but you could be a little bit of a Chewbacca with those long arms as well. So yeah. You're in there somewhere anyway.
Yeah.
And then
playing a bit part.
Yeah, you may be one of the fighters in the planes that flies around.
Yeah, I doubt I would have that many lines.
No.
Yeah, but I may appear in a couple of scenes with a couple of high profile.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like that's, just running here, and stuff.
That's fine.
Yeah, it's grand. You're in it. You're in Star Wars. Yeah. And then the second Star Wars, when the Empire Strikes Back. Obviously. And they beat you like a week later.
Uh-huh.
And they kicked the shit out of you.
Uh-huh.
And that was like, oh no, we're not what we thought we were.
Uh-huh.
The rebels were being defeated. And
yeah.
And there was a bit of doubt.
Yeah.
And there has been, like, but we've been building back our strengths over the last few years and building our squad. And then the Return of the Jedi was...
So on that occasion, Darth Vader was coming in, like, high shots in Zeebo's head and stuff.
Exactly. Yeah. Just evilness. Yeah. Everything. And so the All Blacks are like, they're kind of like stormtroopers because they're all so good. It's hard to pick out one and make them like uh-huh. superstars. So they're all just like consistent stormtroopers everywhere. Yeah, so yeah. Just like, Jesus, one of them falls. And just get another stormtrooper. And it's like, ah, Jesus. And that, but then, yeah, so the Return of the Jedi was like when we, last week or 2 weeks ago,
uh-huh.
when we finally defeated them. And I think in our own, and we proved that this wasn't a fluke, that this is us taking over the mantle as potentially the best team in the world.
Did any characters die between The Empire Strikes Back and The Return of the Jedi? Because that's me.
That could be you, yeah. No, just kind of like nobody's, just nobody's that no one really...
There was a lot of nobody's died.
There was a couple that like flew into things that probably...
That's me.
Yeah, like a kamikaze, but it was like, yeah, that was you. So yeah. You were kind of...
Like long arms. flying into things.
Taking it out for the team. Boba Fett. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
I was kind of... Yeah, Boba Fett is like... He's quite greedy, wasn't he? Was he good or bad? I'm not sure. So you could be Boba Fett. I was thinking maybe... Yeah, George Hook is just Jabba the Hutt.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty harsh, but it just put him in there anyway, you know. Who else? Yoda, I was thinking Rory Best could be a little Yoda.
Okay, yeah.
Kind of quite good at the Force.
Yeah.
Using Joe's Force.
Yeah, really old.
Getting old, but still able to move. He surprises you. You think, oh, he's probably just going to keel over.
Yoda can move, can't he?
Yeah. You're surprised you think he's going to keel over any second, then he's like, fuck. Jeez, he's turned over a ball there.
Jeez, Yoda's darts are accurate, aren't they?
Yeah. Little bald head. He's running around, kind of green.
We'll have to get him on the show.
Yeah, yeah. And then...
Sir Yoda Best.
Sir Yoda Best. He had a big week as well, didn't he? Jesus. So I'd be worried is the only thing, right? That we... Okay, we're defeating them in the Return of the Jedi, like... And the Ewoks are all like Keith Earls and Josh van der Fleer and Bundy Aki and all these guys that the All Blacks probably didn't really acknowledge. Sometimes the All Blacks don't really do that. They only know one or two of our players, like Luke Skywalker and Peter Manny's Han Solo, obviously.
Yeah.
But then they start shoving spears into them and just throwing rocks at them and stuff, and they surprise them how actually brilliant they are.
Yeah.
So we end up defeating them. But now we're at a stage where... We're the best in the world, and
now they know our names.
We don't want. How do we maintain this? And my fear is that we're going to get that we might get a bit arrogant. Now that Joe Schmidt's gone, like we don't want to do what Star Wars did and like employ Jar Jar Binks as our next coach. shit all over the
Jar Jar Farrell.
Yes. Well, I think we've now that. Now that it's Farrell, I think we're okay. But that was my fear. Is like, imagine Jar Jar Binks. Like, but he's hilarious. He's big floppy ears and he's great crack. Like, no,
doesn't matter.
He's gonna take the shit all over the whole saga. He's gonna ruin it all. So yeah, that would be my big fear. But and then my other thing is that Raj, he could be Darth Vader, So he's like Anakin Skywalker. He's gone down to New Zealand to learn
the dark side. Oh, that is perfect.
And then he becomes
well done
Darth Vader. Yeah. And then he comes back, and then he starts coaching New Zealand and they beat us.
Darth Vader with his like Cork accent.
Yeah. And then he comes back and he's actually Johnny Sexton's father. He's like, Johnny, I am your father.
Oh my, you've really thought this through.
Oh yeah. But one of my favorite ones as well is Lando Calrissian. Do you remember him?
Oh no.
He was Han Solo's buddy who kind of fucked them over in Empire Strikes Back.
Uh-huh.
And he's Simon Zeebo. He's kind of betrayed us.
Yeah.
But we still love him.
Yes.
And he actually, Lando Calrissian actually comes back and saves the day.
Uh-huh.
So like, Zeebs may still come back and save the day.
And save the day.
Yeah. So that's some hope.
Not for another year, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah.
Not under Schmidt.
No, yeah. But he's like, yes.
Yeah, maybe under Jar Jar.
Schmidt's gone. I love Jar Jar. Yeah, so that was my take. That was the only work I did on rugby in the last 3 weeks. So
well done.
Pretty okay.
Very good. Yeah, very good. It's consistent. It works well on so many layers.
Yeah, I think we need to get like a video of this, maybe some of the music.
Yeah.
Or that big long scroll thing that hangs at the top of Star Wars.
Yeah.
You know? But anyway, that's it. Yeah, that's my. In a galaxy far, far away, let's hope we win the World Cup.
Baz, how have you. Have you found, has there been obviously new headsets, new microphones?
Very cool.
But I mean, watching from afar, have you seen like the development of Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby?
Absolutely. I've seen you just come into your own, man. You didn't even look like you needed me.
Oh, I did. Baz.
Did you?
I thought this would have been a brilliant time. I know we talked about the Wayne's World, the revamp, but I would have loved it if you had come back and we'd have had like the Wayne's World, the rebrand, and you'd be like, lads, I'm outside here. And we're going, oh, that's... that's the old studio. We've got one in Balls Bridge here now.
Completely forgotten about it.
Yeah. And we've got like these microphones that hang down. Like, we're on showbiz. And I'm in a tuxedo.
Yeah.
And we've got like a band, like a the Saturday Night Live band. And you're going, what's happening? Our first guest is like Lady Gaga. And you're going... what has happened?
What have you done with my show? This is my show.
Ruined it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm disappointed now, man. Yeah. Way better. Do you think we could get Lady Gaga?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, we made about, Josh, but we made about 15 phone calls.
Yeah. We ended up on you.
Yeah. But, so I think Lady Gaga is probably a bit of a stretch.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anyway. If we don't get Lady Gaga, I would love to get James Ryan on the couch. Would you like that?
Yes.
Yeah.
That'd be ideal. Yeah. James Ryan, we did an interview. I don't think we're maybe going to go on to it later on this episode. I think we are.
Yeah.
James Ryan, in the first script, we're not scripted, viewers and listeners, but we've got like a loose kind of template. This is what we're working off.
Yeah.
This is what we're going to discuss. And it came up and it said... the Leinster Phenom, and this is our like one of our early episodes. The Leinster Phenom, and I went, oh my goodness, we are so high profile. That's the Undertaker from WWF, the Phenom. You know, that's what they called him in WWF.
No, I didn't know that. That's what they called him. Yeah,
yeah, the Phenom.
What does that mean? I don't even know what that word means.
It means it's like I was just about to bluff there and said it's like. Phenomenon abbreviated.
Okay, so it's
but I don't know.
Phenom.
Yeah. Right, okay. I haven't a clue if that's what phenom means.
That's what I was thinking. It probably does. So yeah. So you think he's like the Undertaker from?
Yeah.
That's great.
And James Ryan's like high profile enough.
Yeah.
But the Undertaker.
Yeah.
He'll be up there with Gaga.
Yeah. I'd love to get him on.
What a combination!
And his little buddy with the urn.
Yeah.
Al Gore. What's his name? Al Gore.
What's his name? That was fella.
Al Gore, yeah, he was vice president and then also the hype man for the Undertaker.
Yeah.
Al, whatever his name is, something Al.
If I will not.
Oh, it was something like a Paul Bearer.
Paul Bearer. Well
sorry,
done.
Not Al. Yeah,
well done,
Paul Bearer. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. That was great. Anyway, but we just in case we don't get the Undertaker or Lady Gaga. We had producer Pat went and met James Ryan and had a chat with him in his nifty Canterbury gear.
So was it always was there a bit of back row for you as well when you were starting off, or was it always kind of luck?
There was, yeah, there was. I actually played full back in junior school, in sixth class, and then first year was open side. Second row, third year, number eight. Then from fourth year, I was into the death row. So, so that's kind of how it evolved, yeah.
And I'd heard a story as well that I think it was Brian had mentioned as well that when you were playing against Newbridge in that final that you'd done your MCL, your medial ligaments, and was it a thing that you thought you could play through the pain, like you thought you could get through it?
Yeah, it wasn't actually my MCL, but I did damage it. I don't even remember what I did to it, but to be honest, barely felt it. Like, it was a junior cup final and it was in a packed Donnybrook and we were on the verge of winning, so I think anybody would have done the same, really, on our team anyway.
And did it cause you pain afterwards? Like, did you, you know, to get through something like that, did it cause you some pain afterwards for a couple of weeks?
Yeah, it did. Like any injury, a bit sore for a couple of weeks. Luckily, the season was kind of over at that stage, so there's no big issue.
Yeah, I was talking to, you know, Gary and Robbie being here as well, and we're all going on about that game against the All Blacks in Chicago, and you know, the fact that the boys kind of got to experience that as well. But this was kind of, there's already talk of you at this stage maybe making a breakthrough to the team, but you had a pretty bad hamstring tear, wasn't it? That kind of, you know, knocked you back a few months, didn't it?
Yeah, I suppose it did knock me back a bit. You know, it was kind of my first long-term injury, so it was a bit new to me. You know, that kind of extended period on the sidelines. You know, a lot of other guys have had a number of long periods in sidelines. You look at somebody like Ed Byrne, I mean, like how determined he's stayed through all that, and you know, he's doing so well now. But yeah, it was difficult, but like we're blessed in Leinster with the guys that look after us. Like I had Fergal Cairn looking after my rehab, and Derek Hurley was the academy physio at the time, and you know, they made my life a lot easier.
And you made the instant impact on that tour as well, the game against USA and the games against Japan as well. Like the guys all kind of did so well. A lot of guys stood up, like Andrew Porter as well, and took their chance. But you had your first kind of home debut then at the Aviva, and I remember we all spoke to you after that game as well, and just that kind of, if you look back at it now, like is that one of those kind of standout memories from that big first season you had last year?
Yeah, definitely. The South African match, the Aviva, was kind of like I was making my Irish debut or first Irish cap again.
Yeah,
you know, obviously I had my first cap in the US, which was special. But there's something about playing in the Aviva, in front of a kind of a packed crowd, and having all your family and all your friends there, kind of felt like you were doing it again, which was great. So yeah, that's definitely one of the standouts from last season.
We would have talked a bit last year, you know, in the podcast that we do, about the likes of James Downey and Kevin McLaughlin would have spoke about, they almost felt sorry for you in a way that you had this record, this unbeaten record, you're going out every week, and it was James Ryan, 21 wins in a row, 22 wins in a row. Was that something that you actually, I know you don't want to lose, but once you got rid of that, was that something just that you were happy to leave it behind?
I was happy to leave it behind, yeah. Probably the only silver lining of losing in Australia for me personally was that, you know, that kind of malarkey was finished. Yeah.
And there's the I think it was the famous story, I think it was maybe Johnny Sexton was the story about after you guys won the Grand Slam, saw yourself and Dan hitting the gym as well a day or two after. But
yeah,
surely I want to know, in the middle of it all, you did go out and have fun and
yeah,
have a
yeah,
couple of drinks.
Well,
in the middle of it,
yeah,
all.
Well, Sexton saw us coming into the gym, but I'm not going to lie, we were going in for a swim. So we weren't hitting the gym, but no, I did, it was class, unbelievable celebrations. Then I got down to Galway as well. We got about 5-6 days off, so I headed west with 2 or 3 mates. So I did soak it all in, and I enjoyed it while it lasted.
Thank you to producer Pat for talking to the phenom, James Ryan there. But now each week we take a look over some of the rugby stories that you might have missed over the weekend. And we're going to start with the English match in Twickenham versus Australia. Did you see that?
I did, yeah.
Yeah. Big win. A few talking points. Owen Farrell's tackle, second one in a few weeks. What did you make of it?
Very similar to the to the other one. Only maybe he might have got away with it. Well, he got away with the last one as well, I suppose. But this one, he got away with it more, I suppose, because it was slightly less dominant a collision, and then he went back as well, and he didn't. It wasn't as powerful a shot. It was as powerful a shot, but it wasn't as dominant.
He's so man for a shot. Like,
oh my goodness, he must be so powerful. Like,
yeah, because he was off balance.
Yes,
he's going across.
I know,
and it was a huge collision. Like,
yeah, I know.
It?
Yeah.
Just timing wise, I suppose he just probably planted his right foot and got under him. But
he didn't wrap. He didn't wrap, did he? It's hard.
No.
That's one. That one's probably even harder to wrap than the first one. Again, when I was chatting to Drico, he said that in his chats with the referees after the first one, because Drico came out on Twitter and said that it shouldn't have been a penalty, and it wasn't a penalty.
Yeah.
But then he was corrected by the referees. They said, so if you hit with that shoulder, you have to wrap with that arm. So he hit with his right shoulder and only wrapped
his left.
Partially with his left, which isn't good enough. You have to wrap with the shoulder that you hit with.
Mm.
So,
yeah.
But I suppose in that one, that's irrelevant because neither arm went near wrapping.
No, he just kind of ran into him a little bit.
Yeah, and especially after all the chat about the last one a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Surprised nothing was, yeah, nothing was done
it's,
about it.
It's a rugby league style, so isn't it? That's definitely something that you see a lot more in rugby league. So maybe that's where it's kind of rubbed off on him from his dad's influence or something like that. I'm not sure, but
his dad and him like doing that in the garden.
Yeah,
when he's young.
Absolutely.
Well, that miss one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Take that.
Take that, Jar Jar. yeah, it's hard to like. I'd hate to see those big collisions taken out of the game. You know.
But, yeah.
I suppose if that's the letter of the law at the moment, then maybe it should have been a penalty. But look, it adds for a little bit of spice, doesn't it?
Spice.
Good win for England, though.
Very straightforward. Australia were like, just making mistakes and dropping balls, and I thought they were quite poor.
Yeah, in a bit of disarray at the moment down there, I think. And even on my travels down Australia, might have put Paul Warwick, former Munster fullback and out half, met up with Tony McGann, former Munster coach, who's working with the Brisbane
Broncos.
Who the Brisbane team again? Is that the Mets?
Brisbane's the Reds.
The Reds.
Yeah.
He's working with their academy now. And he just says, it's a bit of a weird vibe down there with the ARU at the moment, or the Australian Rugby Union.
Yeah.
They're in a little bit of disarray, but I think they'll pull it back together for the World
Cup. It seems like it's only a matter of time before there's so much talent in that team.
Yeah.
They have to come good.
Yeah.
But we've been saying this for a while, I suppose.
Yeah. The other big one, Eddie Jones actually came out after that game and said he wanted to see Ireland and England. He wanted to play Ireland.
Yeah, let me add them
straight away. Yeah, if he could play them tomorrow, he would, because they're the best team in the world. And, and that's pretty interesting. He'll always come out with something that'll kind of grab the headlines anyway. But was that an arrogant thing, or was he?
I think he just. I think he just seems to enjoy press conferences and just enjoy chatting and
stoking the fire,
beating a few coaches and it adds something to it. I think the press for a period they were loving him. Obviously, when they're not as successful as they were a year and a half ago, then he just doesn't get away with as much. But to be fair to him, he's still giving the chat and it's entertainment.
Oh. It just really just builds it. It's going to be such a class. Yeah. Six Nations. I cannot wait for it. Another one, Fiji beating France. Huge result there. I didn't see. I just saw some clips, some of the scores.
In Dublin, in a bar in Dublin after the game, and I was down with a couple of guys from school, and one guy who wouldn't really follow rugby. It had it was in French, but it was FRA and then FID. For Fiji, and they were beating France, obviously. And he goes, "Geez, that's some performance from Finland, isn't it?"
Brilliant. Why was it FID?
I think it must have been like the French. Like,
sorry, I got you. Right.
Yeah,
it was some performance. I mean, it's only a matter of time before Finland become a before Fiji really start beating. You know, the likes of France or...
Isn't that so French, though? Isn't it so French just to be, you know, dominant in size one week and then just kind of struggle in the next? And it's just so... They're so reliant on their talent and their flair and that's why they're entertainment to watch, I suppose. But, as you say, then there's obviously Fijians. There's plenty of them playing in France and plenty of them dominating week in, week out. So, as you say, there's if you put 15 talented individuals together...
Mm. It's going to be a tough group, those. They're in with Wales and Australia in the group.
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting one. Again, no easy groups, but that's certainly going to be a tough one. Mm. Elsewhere this weekend, some great results for the Irish provinces in the Pro 14 Guinness Series. Did you get to... You were at the Ulster match.
I was at the Ulster. We were in the Scarlets and they got beat.
Yeah.
It's a miserable place to go. That was the last game I played over there. That finished me off.
Really?
It was just so cold and miserable. And
wet.
Yeah, it's awful. Yeah. I hate Parky Scarlets. Ulster never win there and Scarlets never win in Belfast. So you go there and you just...
Even though it's a nice stadium now and it's...
It's not really.
I don't think so.
No.
It's just a bit... It's in the middle of a car park, in a
it
shopping centre.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the floodlights aren't high enough.
Right. And it's very dull there all the time. Yeah. Yeah, I know what you mean.
And I think I've been under high balls and I've gone, that ball, it's gotten dark at the top of the flight.
Yeah.
Someone needs to tilt the floodlights up. That'll solve that problem.
That's a really interesting point.
That's my excuse anyway.
Yeah, because it used to be a really nice place to go back in the day. It wasn't the same.
It was Stradi.
Stradi Park. That was a great place.
Yeah.
Great atmosphere. You felt like, you know, the crowd were right on top of you.
It was intense, wasn't it?
And stuff like that. I actually had one of my favourite moments ever on a rugby pitch in Stradi Park, where the ball went over the try line, our try line, and I was running back to touch it down, but the ref was beside me to touch it down for 22, and I just said to the ref, I'm not going to touch it down. And he goes, okay. So I pretended to touch it down, and then I walked out, and everyone else had presumed I touched it down, so they thought I was going to take 22. So I walked as far as the 22. I was there, oh my God.
I'm getting away with it.
And I was kind of walking quite fast, and then I just took off.
Brilliant.
And no one knew what to do. And the worst thing about it was even the camera crew presumed that I was going to take a 22, so they like flicked to someone else in the stand or something like that, so it was never picked up on TV.
Oh, Barry, that's
just
brilliant.
Just flicked back and I got tackled maybe down towards their 22.
You made it all the way to
just like sprinted straight line.
Do you think maybe if you just kept walking they would have just thought you were if you just like never actually give the game away,
yeah,
and then just put the ball down,
maybe. Yeah. Like, start pointing at people and giving out no. Really fast.
I love if the ref had a screwed you and he was like, what are you doing, man? Easing on him.
He touched it out. I can't remember who the ref was, but yeah.
Very sound to him.
Very sound. Yeah, he appreciated it. Yeah. He was having a good laugh off it.
Yeah.
Some great results. But some great results for Munster, Connacht, and Leinster. I think Munster, I suppose, talking point there, great to see Conor Murray back.
Yeah.
And Chris Farrell and Ronan O'Mahony and even Tyler Blend all over the last few weeks.
Yes, playing 12?
Yes, he played 12 on Bill Johnson was 10, yeah. It's a great position for Munster to be in.
Yeah.
Great for Conor to get back. Actually, Conor was my Princess Leia. I forgot to mention that earlier on.
Right.
Yeah, because we didn't know what, you know, Princess Leia was a bit off in the second Star Wars, which Connor's been a little bit like, don't know what's wrong with him over the last while. She got a pain in her neck or something like that. Now she's back and we're all over again.
Princess Mary.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, great to have him back. Even Chris Farrell, like, he's one that goes under the radar. Like, what an unbelievable player. And
class player, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, did you play much with him up in
I think he might have done his ACL back in the day when he was in the Ulster Academy.
Mm-hmm.
He had a couple of injuries in a row and he never got any joy, and then he took off to Grenoble. Mm-hmm. But he was always one that everybody was saying he's pretty talented. He's
6'4", 18 stone, 13.
Like, great skills, though.
Yeah.
That makes you think that he's going to be physical. Like, he obviously is pretty physical as well, but he's got great skills.
Great. And his great running lines are incredible, whether it's a decoy running line or a hit line back off a 10 or a 12. That's one thing that's really stood out to me.
Yeah.
He's not just a lump. He knows what shoulders to target and how to sit people down.
Yeah. I think Joe rates him as well. He could get back in the mix for Six Nations.
Well, I think Joe's always, when he won that man of the match against Wales last year, I think Joe's comments after the game were that he's a very nice person. That's what he spoke about. And I was like, that's lovely. You know, he's like, said like he's a really cool guy and he does come across like that. And what a headache that's going to be if you have the likes of, you know, Henshaw, Aki, Ringrose, Farrell, all of them fit at the same time. Like, who do you pick?
Yeah.
You know, what a kind of combination that we have in our armour.
Again,
and then Leinster on Friday night, again, blooding some absolutely brilliant players. Again, it's crazy, the conveyor belt they have up there.
Yeah, Scott Penny made his debut there.
Yeah.
Seven, another Michaels boy.
Yeah, that's, I think he's scored something like 8 tries for Leinster A this year already, or something ridiculous like that, and only after coming out of school this year as well.
Yeah.
They have, what were you saying, I think?
18. That was including Cathal Marsh, who's just moved on. So 17, I think 17 in the current Leinster squad.
Michael's boys.
Yeah.
Yeah. Incredible.
And then two elsewhere, two in Connacht, Cian Kelleher and one other. Can't remember who it is. but like that's yeah. some going. So people talk about the Leinster juggernaut, their production line, and just feeding provinces with players who are class, but just not class enough to play for Leinster. Yeah. And but then
look at Scott Penny, like the guys that are ahead of him now at seven, like you've got Sean O'Brien, Van der Fleer,
Dan
Levy. Who else?
Reese Ruddock's played seven Ruddock. This year.
Yeah.
So arguably Scott Penny's then their fifth choice seven.
Yeah.
Anywhere else you'd be going, jeez, your man, the fifth choice can't be up too much.
Yeah.
But I bet you he's good.
Yeah.
I bet he's going to be handy.
Yeah.
That's the way Leinster do it, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's great. And just a tip of the hat to all those schools, teams that are, or the schools that are producing these players and the coaches that are, the coaching that are going on in those schools.
They're professional before they're professional.
Yeah. That's the difference, I think, at the moment. This conveyor belt of players coming through. Very interesting few weeks ahead, or whether these players, you know, do you reckon the Irish players will go straight back into the provinces this weekend, or get a bit of a rest for the Guinness Pro 14 this week?
Yeah, there was about five or six Leinster players were released last week, and then none of them featured, so they've had their week off.
Yeah,
the rich get richer, don't they? Like the best teams about, like the Leinster, kind of, they have the luxury of being able to rest and rotate, and then the guys come back in 100% feeling sweet. Having not played that much rugby, just get straight into Europe. One guy, Andrew Conway, went really well against USA. He was the kind of standout. Ringrose as well, I suppose. But Conway, it feels like a year ago he was next in line for the Rob Kearney's throne.
Yeah.
And then it seems like now Will Addison's got in there, and now Jordan Larmour's got in there, and Conway's kind of not. He definitely hasn't been forgotten about, but he's kind of just not been talked about as much. It was nice to see him coming back in. I thought he was brilliant the weekend.
Yeah.
Really, really good.
Just electric.
Yeah.
Constantly looking for the ball.
Yeah. He was standout.
Yeah.
Patrick, and then a couple of assists as well. So everything he did was brilliant.
We haven't even talked about the USA match.
Oh, yeah.
There's too much else going on. But geez, we forget to talk about the international that happened this weekend.
Yeah.
But yeah, and for a guy to score a hat-trick for Ireland, what a great achievement. Yeah. And
it wasn't a great game, to be fair.
It wasn't.
There was one scrum. There was one scrum in USA 22 in the second half. It got reset by five or six times, and it went on for about 10 minutes. And then I looked around, and there was a Mexican wave going on around the stadium. I was like, no one could care less about the rugby anymore.
No. It had that kind of feel about it from the get-go, didn't it? Like, it's a weird position to be in when these guys are thrown together a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
And you're expected to win. And the US put up a good fight, they did, to be fair. And but you know, I suppose it might not look like a very comprehensive win, but then you look at the scoreline, it was actually a pretty big result. But just as you were saying, actually, we put out a tweet yesterday to find out who the Guinness Maid of Moore Player of the Weekend was, and the poll came back with a roaring result, say Andrew Conway was by far the best player of the weekend.
Yeah, I think I might have ruined the tension around that one.
Yeah, no, you let.
Didn't I?
You did. Guess what? It's Andrew Conway.
Yeah.
But he well deserved. So fair play to you, Andrew, and a good way for him to kick on into the European games coming up for the next few weeks. And then also we put out a hashtag AskHOR on Twitter last night to see if you had any questions for us. So loads came in, a lot of them asking who standout players the Guinness series were. Anyone, any few in particular for you?
Josh Van der Fleer went really well. James Ryan went well.
Pete O'Mahony, I suppose.
Oh, Pete, of course, yeah. To be honest, most of them. I mean, the other three games were just nothing by comparison. The Argentina game, USA game, no atmosphere, flat, and kind of you just got through them. But everything was about that New Zealand game, and everybody played out of their skin that day. To be fair, it's hard to single a few guys out, but yeah, James Ryan,
yeah, clone him. Tommy Burke wants to know how Ireland are going to fix their line-out heading into 2019. Seems to be trouble whenever Dev Toner is not there. I'll leave you take that one, man.
As a line-out specialist.
As a line-out specialist, yeah. Yeah, the lineup was poor, I suppose, the weekend, wasn't it? It was a bit rocky.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Yeah. To be honest, I switched off a few times during the game. I wasn't really.
Yeah.
I was commentating and I was still. You're wasn't still really paying attention.
Sort of da-da-da-da-da. Yeah, I think, look, it's hard when you lose, especially Pete O'Mahony and Devin Toner, like two of the best line-out operators in the world. So when you do take them out of it, there's obviously going to be a bit of a step down. But look, we've got Hendo and James Ryan and these guys that are there for a reason. Even Tyke Byrne showed some incredible athleticism at the weekend with just catching kickoffs and stuff, which, you know, I think Dev has been ruling the roost with that over the last few weeks. But look, I think there's an abundance of talent there, and you can't just judge that off. You know, lineouts are complicated as well. It's whether the hookers throwing, the calls, the jumps, the lifts. So I'm sure it is something that they'll be looking into and they'll get right. And yeah, that's kind of about the most of it. Someone also did tweet me last night asking who is Baz. So
tweeted you?
I put out on Twitter any questions tomorrow, and someone goes, "Who is Baz?" So I am Barry Murphy. I used to play rugby for Munster, and I am now in a band, and I am the co-host of Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby. So thanks for your question, dude, whoever you are.
So we will answer any question.
Yeah.
If we'll answer that. Don't be thinking, oh, is this question a bit silly? Not as silly as that one.
Yeah, that's great. Doesn't have to be rugby related at all.
Ask us anything. Star Wars related.
Yeah.
WWF. The Undertaker.
Lady Gaga.
Tanah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's up to you. All right, guys. Thank you, everybody, for your comments, questions, for listening and for watching on YouTube. If you are enjoying the show, please do remember to subscribe and leave us a rating or a comment. A big thank you to everyone who has helped putting the show together. It's been great crack this week, dropping that bomb of Joe Smith. So we'll be back next week to talk about the aftermath of all that. I've been Barry.
I've been Uncle Andy.
And this is Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Glendy.
You were listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness. Drink responsibly. Visit drinkaware.ie for the facts.